Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast. For an understated TT, we didn't get the Planche de Belfi experience like we did last year, but we weren't expecting it either. Here with Benji, as usual, on the Saturday before Champs-Élysées for Stage 20, the show is supported by Lacole, who produced performance cycling apparel. You know how we do TT, straight into the results. Wout van Aert underperformed a little bit, I think. Coming after Jonas in the first TT today, he absolutely smoked it, winning this TT with a time of 35.53, a quicker average speed for everybody, 51.5 Ks an hour, quicker than the first TT. A little, he said it better suited him. Asgreen second, 21 seconds behind Van Aert. Then Jonas Vingegaard third, backing up his stage 5 TT performance. Then Kuhn, Bissiger, Cattaneo, Bjerg, Pogacar, Kort, Alaphilippe, Van Baarle rounding up the top 10. Oh, McNulty might be 11th. So big gaps from Van Aert to, I think, 12th or 13th is about 2 minutes. So really solid performance from him. And do you think, seeing this performance from Van Aert, Benji, that it's accurate to say he was a little bit undercooked for no one's fault in maybe the first five stages of this year's tour?
I think so. I think we kind of discussed that at the start as well, that he had the surgery like a month before the Tour de France started, even closer than a month, the appendicitis thingy. And that obviously had its consequences. It didn't give him the perfect preparation, and therefore he wasn't at his optimal form there. And it looks like throughout the Tour de France, he was growing gradually towards the end of the tour. And most importantly, I think for him, the Tokyo Olympics that are coming up in like a week. Crazy, but yeah, it's coming. And it turns out that on the Ventoux, he was already pretty damn strong in week two, but today he basically destroyed everybody, and it didn't really feel close. Even like at the start of the time trial, we had good times, like in Asgreen doing a good time and destroying the people that were already having results. But then Van Aert came, and it was like, okay, first time he's significantly under the time of Asgreen. So at this point, I'm thinking Van Aert is a kind of time trialist that tends to keep that same level for a long time trial and doesn't exactly break down in the third part, stuff like that. So I thought he had it the second he rode under the first time check, personally. You?
Yeah, he seems to have paced. He didn't fade badly on the stage one TT. He was behind, I thought, like not doing great at the T1. So let me just looking at the intermediate splits today, he was first in all the intermediates except the second to the finish. He gave a little bit back to Alaphilippe, did the quickest second to the finish. He did an 11.36, 13 seconds quicker than Van Aert, and he came 10th. Wow. So maybe Alaphilippe went out too easy. I almost feel like Alaphilippe did a much better TT today, I think, than his stage 5 TT, where we low-key thought he might come top 5. Other notable performances, I guess, are four Danish riders in the top 10, Asgreen, Vingegaard, Kort, and who else? Bjerg. Mikael Bjerg, he's won three under-23 world championships, but he's always outside the top three regularly of these Grand Tour stages. But yeah, Danish TT is on fire. And the other big news, of course, is Ben O'Connor. The big GC battle we thought might happen would be O'Connor like 32 seconds before the stage ahead of Kelderman. Kelderman on paper, a better time trialist. O'Connor maybe not have, you know, practiced it enough or had the investment from the team in his TT before this Tour de France. And the quokka roared, Ben O'Connor. Ben O'Connor, let's go, baby. Held fourth at the Tour from Perth.
What was that?
Get the fuck out of here, Kelderman. Ben O'Connor. Can't believe it. I'm so happy for O'Connor. Now, he did it a weird way in that he lost like 4 minutes in the first few stages. And then how many minutes did he actually make back, Benji, on the other team? He made back on Kelderman on stage 9. Guess how many minutes?
Six.
6:50. 6:50 because no one chased that breakaway with O'Connor in it. Movistar didn't chase it. EF helped him, and Bora didn't chase it at all. And you just needed to chase a little bit. And yeah, so that was interesting.
Maybe yeah, and he like started the time trial as well, saying like fourth or fifth, I don't really care. It's like it's top five. He didn't really care about fourth and fifth. And
I cared more than he did.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I think that the pressure of that feeling that it's top five anyway probably gives him less of like the pressurized feeling. I have to go for fourth
now. Podium,
is it? Yeah, exactly. So it's that healthy pressure that is not demoralizing or demotivating among the park, or if you're not actually making it during the first intermediates. But at the first intermediate already, he was getting better results than Kelderman. Kelderman, who did crash twice this Tour de France, that's also important, but so did 90% of the peloton. Yeah. So yeah, it always depends on how hard you crash and so forth. But I do want to come back 1 second towards the Danish masterpieces in that top 10. I think I discussed this a tiny bit last time, but I want to add more to it. Let's say you've got a team time trial with national teams. Would you go for Denmark or Italy? Denmark being Asgreen, Vingegaard, Biel, Kortz, Mats Wurtschmidt, or those kind of riders, versus Agana, Affini, Cataneo, and Betiol and so forth?
Who of Slovenia got Pogacar, Roglic, Tratnik,
Horvat?
Yeah, I'd have to think about it. Australia got Dennis, Durbridge, Sweeney, Port, O'Connor. Nah, yeah, I think Denmark's pretty good. Belgium, who have you got? That's an off-season one. Someone write
like
that down.
Like four for something.
Sturven and Greg Van Avermaet would attack each other in TT. sorry, we're getting out of control here. There's not much too much happening in this stage. I just want to say, I know I was being mean to Kelderman. He actually had a great tour, to be honest. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stages. He's in the top 10. 2 top fives in stages 1 and 2. Very nice. He's, as Benji said, crashed a couple of times. Second or third in the Giro last year. He's now fifth at Tour de France. And yeah, he just, with not much teammate help at all, really. I mean, I'm sure they were helping him a little bit. Buchmann did help him on Luzardo Den. But generally, he and Sagan went to the Tour de France and allowed the other teammates to be, the teammates that were selected were not there to help them. And Kelderman did his own thing. Sagan crashed out. Pullet and Conrad and Schelling were all able to do their own things. And so they got fifth at the Tour plus a couple of stage wins. So yeah, really good from Kelderman. So good on him. And I'll be interested to see what the rest of his season looks like. He's doing the road race afterwards. But O'Connor, Benji, it doesn't actually change my opinion too much on it. You got to remember for this, I'll read out the final GC standings just to remind people. Pogacar wins GC 5:20 ahead of Jonas, then 7 minutes ahead of Carapaz. 10 minutes to fourth, O'Connor, then Kelderman, Mas, Lutsenko, Guillaume Martin, Pale Bilbao, Uran round out the top 10, Uran at 18 minutes. Remember that Roglic was favourite for the Tour narrowly on Betfair just before it started, crashed out. Thomas crashes and don't know what else happened to him. Port, don't know what's happened to him, sick maybe. So there's three of the top four favourites for this Tour de France out. Oh no, sorry, Carapaz was fourth favourite. Through the top five. And so I think this top 10 looks very different, Benji, with Roglic here. And maybe O'Connor wouldn't have been allowed that license to get 8 minutes up the road on Tignes. I think that's the stage Jumbo would have targeted. But yeah, my question to you is, and it was asked on the commentary, if you're Asia Deserve Citroën, do you now invest everything into O'Connor GC for like the Tour or Giro next year?
No. I think that he does deserve a support, and he does deserve a role where he's in the leadership. We've seen that from, was it Romandy or Swiss, one of those Swiss races already, Romandy, where he was doing really well, the stage that Thomas crashed in the last kilometer.
Yeah.
And O'Connor has the ability to ride on the mountains properly. It feels like he's better at the mountainous, steady mountainous parkour than the really steep pinches. Correct me if I'm wrong. And when it comes to time trial, he's not actually horrendous. It's not great. Like, let's be real, his time trial today is not amazing either.
Nah,
but it's because Kelderman underperformed today. But I'd still say that it's manageable. So it is valuable to get top 10s in Grand Tours, top 5s, if he is lucky, in the sense that
Giro.
If he loses time in the first week and then comes back in the second week on Tignes, 6 minutes and 50 seconds, well, that's a slight bit of luck that you have that leash to get freed on the first week, you know. It was the lack of control in week one that allowed breakaways on stage 7, 8, and 9 to get so easily, like, the free gift of the stage, because UAE wasn't sure of themselves yet. They weren't confident yet in, can we actually control this stage? And as a consequence, they're letting breakaways go, and O'Connor was one of the riders in there. It could just as well have been, I don't know, Paré-Peintre or Mankies or Godu, stuff like that. But I think that O'Connor proved afterwards that he was deserving of that spot, that he was deserving of being a GC competitor here. We were talking about it directly after Tignes. Can he actually manage it? Podium, we deemed not really doable, but we did say he can keep top 10, and it's better than that. It's top 5. And
yeah.
I think you even said that it could have been top 5 if he really went for it. So awesome stuff. Ben O'Connor, really well done. And it kind of sparks the interest of, like, these budget GC riders. I think you mentioned it before we started recording today. Magic Ateneo, he's been riding very well in time trials. Like, genuinely, I think he was
top 10 both TTs.
Oh, it was an 8th. Okay. A bit worse than I expected, than I remembered, but still a very strong TT, 8th and 6th in those TTs. And he has the skills to do well on those steady climbs once again, not necessarily the spiky ones. And as a consequence, he is just out of top 10 here. And I wonder where he lost the time. Honestly, was it in Pontivy stage, 72nd? He did lose quite a lot of time there. 1 minute 21 more, 1 minute 56 plus. Yeah. I think it's 1 minute that he lost there. So
yeah.
that's not amazing, but it's also not really moving the needle when it comes to the position he has in GC too much, considering the gaps are significantly larger than that. But
he was doing lead out. He was doing lead out duties.
Yep.
Catania. He was also, I think they were helping Alaphilippe GC stand position in the first 7 stages too, at least until the first TT. So it's not like he had a just ride 100% for yourself the whole time either. I think I want to compare, maybe we'll save it for afterwards, Benji. It's just interesting to me to see, you know, Enric Mas, he forgot to do his skin suit up, but they had the expensive chain put on for the TT. He does finish in 5th last year, 6th this year, still consistent top 10, but it's just different seeing the approaches of, say, education first, guys can go for stages. Jumbo Visma, Roglic crashed out, guys can go for stages. Ineos, it didn't really free their guys. Azurzer and Bora, they let their guys go for stages, but Movistar didn't too much. Maybe a little bit twice. In the third week.
Yeah, Viti and Valverde, and that's it, I think.
Yeah, nothing in the first. Whereas EF always let their guys go for it, because you never know what can happen in the.
Well,
you know.
They also ended on 10th, so it didn't really end too perfectly.
But Uran was second for 2 weeks. Team.
Yeah, you're right. He just collapsed in the final week, and I think that is not necessarily, I don't know what to say about it. It feels like Uran got secured a bit in the first 2 weeks. This is a theory that you launched already at the start of week 2, that you felt like these first 2 weeks protect certain riders because there's no mountain finishers, thus they can actually come back in the descents, or they can try and follow as much as possible until the descent, and then they're done for potentially losing more time and so forth. But on a mountain finish, it's not like that. And in all honesty, Pogacar opened up every third week mountain stage earlier than we've seen in the last, how many years? 5 years in cycling?
Yeah.
With 8K to go on climbs, with 5K to go on climbs. Usually they'd wait until the last kilometer and a half these days, but that was amazing to see. And I think that I also kind of want to discuss Pogacar's time trial, because some people might go ahead and say, like, oh, horrendous time trial today. He's so bad at time trialing. Like, genuinely, oh, 8th, that's horrendous. But I think that there's more to it. I think that he probably had his DS say to him before the stage starts, you've got the yellow jersey, mate. Play it safe. This is the only thing that is keeping you from your yellow jersey. It's finishing safely in Paris. And therefore, his cornering must have been slower than what a normal Pogacar would be doing and so forth. It was noticeable in the corners. Like you did mention during the stage that his cornering was a bit off, right?
Yeah, it just is almost like when he was thinking so much about not crashing, he would then take a weird line and then almost crash. And like he nearly clipped a barrier, I think, after the second intermediate. He went really close to it. I was like, ooh, And he wasn't going quick, and then he was getting the water bottle out. He's drinking it. He wasn't caring too much about time. And listen, you're 5 minutes or whatever, 6 minutes ahead. How are you going to motivate yourself with already winning three stages to go absolutely maximum physically? It's impossible, right? But he still looked pretty cooked after the TT. He looked quite tired, and maybe he was a little bit hot today as well. I know Van Aert said, he's like, when I got into the hot seat, it literally was the hot seat. I was on fire because I was so hot after the effort. Kuhn seemed to pace a little bit too hard. And I want to talk about him now, Benji. Me and you, I like Kuhn. I like Stefan Kuhn, but he faded. So he was second at T1, third at T2. From T1 to T2, he was eighth. And then from T2 to finish, he was sixth. So obviously, I think Kirby called it a banana split, which is kind of funny, I got to say. But yeah, obviously, maybe the weather played into it.
I rolled my eyes hearing that sentence.
I thought it was funny.
Oh, okay.
Whereas Van Aert was good. Van Aert seemed to go a little bit at the end. And I think O'Connor went out really hard. And Kelderman was consistent. But yeah, there's not much else to really say apart from Bilbao.
Well,
he had issues with the radio. Any other things you want to pick out from this?
I think that Stefan Kuhn's problem was mainly the second time check. It's literally called mountain, so obviously it has some mental like influence on him. He thinks it's an actual mountain, and afterwards he exploded. But like, I find it a bit of a joke that the time check is called mountain when it's a hill of like 80 meters above sea level. But all in all, Stefan Kuhn's time trial, he feels like he's a god at prologues. Like, genuinely, when it's a prologue, he's one of the top riders in there. When it comes to longer time trials, I always had something with Kuhn that he was good at them, but he was never really the best rider on the road, and except for like a few occasions. And I feel like this Tour de France shows it as well. There's always one or two riders that are better than him on a parkour. Yes, it's still a relatively hilly parkour, but it's not the hilliest of them all. And on paper, it should fit him. I think that he's likely going to be disappointed after this, and he seems to be very disappointed every time after a time trial that isn't first place, which is always sad to see. But yeah, that's part of the sport, not winning. And I think that Stefan Kuhn is probably going to win some more stuff in his life, but he always hits one better rider, and now it's three better riders today, with Jonas Vingegaard once again with a really strong time trial. One other Dane. Crazy stuff. The guy's like 59 kilos, right? 58 kilos?
Yeah, and I just he gained 12 seconds on Pogacar across the last 12 stages of this year's Tour de France, which is interesting to think about. That's, again, some TDF recap discussions.
And that's with bonus seconds of Pogacar
exactly.
Every stage.
So it's all on the road. He's taken that, or on the TT, really. And that's not including the 38 seconds at the top of Ventoux, because it was a descent finish. So, yeah, just interesting to think about. Him going forward, I think, yeah, I think that's really something for me and Benji to think about as well, for how you distribute Foss, Vingegaard, and Roglic and Van Aert across stage races next year in the Jumbo-Visma squad. Some difficult but good difficult decisions for them to make. But otherwise,
podcast.
Tomorrow, Champs-Élysées, Benji, we said as a meme, it would be Greipel v. Cavendish. Greipel announced today he'd be retiring at the end of this year, not at the end of the TDF, at the end of this year. I think he announced it today because he didn't want it to be overtaken by the furor tomorrow. We said that as a meme, but it's actually our memes are not dreams. They're real now. It could actually be Greipel v. Cav tomorrow plus Van Aert and 108K Champs-Élysées procession. Tell me why a breakaway can't win this stage, Benji.
The reason that I don't think a breakaway will win this stage is because the Koenig will go 100% for Cavendish on this stage. I don't believe that somebody in that team will dare to put their hands in the air and say, what if we attack with Asgreen on that little hill in the tunnel with 1.x amount of kilometers to go? I don't think anyone will dare to propose that in the team because they want, well, obviously the hype in the media is real. That 35th victory beating the Merckx record, it's a thing. And I don't think, well, Cavendish doesn't talk about it, but the fact that he's saying, don't mention a name, that means that he's thinking about it, in my eyes at least. And as a consequence, I think that he's going to try and go for it, and I think the Koenig will try and control that, and they're going to try and set up the perfect lead out for that. I do remember that quite a few times already they did try a late attack on the Champs-Élysées. But what I find most intriguing here is that they actually changed the finish of the Champs-Élysées compared to last year.
Really?
It is 300 meters later. So it's now 700 meters past that corner, that chicane, instead of 400 meters.
The Renshaw corner.
Yeah, and the reason is that there's some new surfacing, and as a consequence, it's less, well, it's still a relatively safe corner, but it's not as safe as before, so they put the finish line later. They thought about safety in a sprint, can you imagine it? Like, that's next level UCI thinking. I'm surprised, mind blown that they did that, but it's a good thing, and I think that it might make the race different, as in the final sprint, because you don't have that opportunity of, like, stretching it out in that chicane. You have to still stretch it out after the chicane, right? Because, like, it changes the lead up, right?
Yeah.
How do you train a Tour de France, Champs-Élysées sprint train? Like, it's not like you can go on location and say...
It's like a crit, right?
Just hire, rent an airport and, like, put cones just like the chicane.
Or just a driving school clinic or something. And, yeah, put the cones out. I don't know. But Van Aert says he's going to be contesting it. I just want to mention, before we pick our favourites for tomorrow, who we think will win the sprint, mention our show partner, Lacole. There's a few days left to use our discount code LRTDF20 to get 20% off at checkout, even on already discounted items. There's the McLaren Project Aero collaboration, as well as the lightweight collection they brought out before the start of the Tour de France. So they support the podcast since its inception, so be if you want to support the podcast as well, you can check out Lacole through the description below. But Benji, who's your pick tomorrow? Is Cav breaking the record?
I don't think so. I think that Wout van Aert's winning tomorrow.
I think so too. I wonder what the odds will be. You think Cavendish will be the favorite?
I'm guessing so, but I don't think Wout van Aert is going to be too far off. Like I mentioned the change in finish, and I think that that might reduce the strength of a lead out a bit, because it's further away from the chicane. So
longer straight.
Going to that chicane. Yeah, okay. Longer straight.
So it's Van Aert.
You've got more time to move up still afterwards.
That's wide.
That's at least how I see it. And therefore, I think that I dare to say Wout van Aert, because that lead out will still be amazing on paper from the Koenig. But I do believe that Wout van Aert will be beating Cavendish tomorrow. But I'd be down for Cavendish to take it as well. But then again, like... I know you want Wout for, well, you said Van Aert as well. I know you said that, but I think that I'm going to have to like switch it and go for Greipel just for like completely biased territories here.
Can Philipsen can obviously win if he gets it right. If you're honest, Rickard, I think the way for them to win is Rickard needs to bring him up. He can't just be on Cavendish wheel. He's never shown he's quick enough to beat Cavendish from behind him, right? Or maybe he did at Turkey. I didn't watch closely enough. But I think Rickard needs to bring Philipsen up, and that can make the difference and move him in front of Cavendish. But that is easier said than done against this quick step train. Otherwise, the sprint field is really, really shallow. Like the other people we're looking at are Matthews, Laporte. Is that it? who else?
Greipel. Yeah, it's definitely not top level. Danny van Poppel.
Those are
the kind of riders you're going towards then. But yeah, I think on paper my mind says Van Aert here, but my heart says Greipel, knowing that he just announced his retirement. So forth. That is how I see it.
Mats Pedersen, he came second last year in this stage. He's not shown anything looking like form since then, so it's hard to go with him for a good result, but I guess, you know, you never know. It's a different sort of stage, easier stage procession-wise. Yeah, I think Van Aert is a good call. But whatever happens, there'll be scenes on Champs-Élysées. Whether Cavendish retires afterwards will be interesting as well. Lefebvre kind of in the media said, oh, yeah, I think it's a great time for Cav to retire. I was like, is that because you can't afford him now because he's good again? So you want him to retire? But, yeah, Pogacar obviously will have that. The yellow jersey procession. And you did some calculations, Benji. How quickly do they need to get on the plane or to get to the airport, to get to Tokyo?
Oh, yeah. It depends on the person. I heard somewhere that it was 3 hours for certain teams to go on the airplane just after the stage. But apparently Pogacar is flying over on Monday. So for him, that's not the case. The thing about Pogacar is I read this quote on Twitter. So it is not a confirmed source, but I found it so funny. Apparently, Pogacar said about it. I was checking on Google Maps whether I could go by car, but apparently not. So we're going by plane. It's in Japan, mate.
Yeah, it's always.
Obviously, you can't go by car.
The team's literally sponsored by like UAE Emirates, which is an airline as well.
Well, yeah.
Wait, they're sponsored by the country, not the airline. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think they're sponsored by the country.
Benji, my geography is obviously maybe not as good as I thought and maybe just as bad as Pogacar's. But today we had the TT. No big changes on GC at all. Van Aert running out the big deserved winner. Denmark absolutely dominating, and we'll see you with the meme battle on Champs-Élysées tomorrow. Maybe we can complain about whether it's a procession or not. I'm hoping Lucas Purslberger snags it from a breakaway attempt. Come on, Lucas.
Like the last. Oh,
come on. Yeah. You can do it, man.
Like if you had to name one rider as a finisher of this podcast, just like the last rider to make that move in the last 3 kilometers, would it be Purslberger or before?
I think he'd like pretend he's doing it as a meme or a joke, but then actually be like, but actually, I'm good. Because didn't he win a Giro stage or something in the same way?
Yeah.
Yeah, Purslberger, please.
I wouldn't get the camera. And actually.
Yeah, I know. Oh, that'd be funny. All right. Hopefully something like that happens and there's a bit of drama, but you know, fingers crossed. We'll see you at the recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.